This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. To my left is Gregory Lenz. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing well, Chris. How you doing?
Nice to see you. Nice to see you again.
Absolutely.
You got a Buffalo Bills hat on.
SMU Mustangs.
You've got a peach-colored shirt.
Is it peach?
I don't know. I'd say peach, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it is peach.
Maybe a light salmon.
A light salmon.
A salmon that's gone through the wash.
A non-farm-raised salmon.
We've got an Instagram, people. If you go to Instagram/WeAreLibertarians, I'll Instagram a picture of Greg and his Buffalo Bills light salmon shirt. we'll solicit your opinions. Yes, we have an Instagram because we are a multimedia empire.
I was going to ask, who controls that? Are you the only one?
It's the same password as everything else.
Okay.
So if you want to post some pictures, go for it.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
Now let's talk about what pictures you'll be posting, King Brutalist.
I have some ideas. And you are in the group now. Congratulations.
Thank you. I have made it to the Brutalist group.
You are inner circle Brutalist.
There are some really sick people, of which you are definitely number one. You're definitely the sickest. I think Amir might be too, but Upton's right up there with him.
Oh, he's bad.
Oh, yeah. Aaron is like the kid that stands at the side and giggles at all the bad stuff. He's like Scott Farkas's little buddy in The Christmas Story.
Yes. But then he's the first to seize on and descend upon you with memes and trolling.
Yeah. And everybody else just really is out for naked pictures. That's kind of, I love it.
Very libertarian.
What can I say? Yeah. Like there's some deviance and then there's some nudist. And that's basically the history of the libertarian movement.
Feels like the Free State Project.
Right. What were we talking about before we got started that we were going to talk about? We were talking about wasting our time. What happens here at We Are Libertarians when we do a podcast is Greg gets here, and then whoever else is here, sometimes it's just Greg and I, we ran through a list of several co-hosts, and none of them could show up today. So Greg and I are going it alone again. We always get together and chat a little bit before and just kind of discuss life's troubles, and then Greg listens.
Although today it sounds like we both have the same one.
which is basically, I was telling him about a book called The War of Art by Stephen Pressman, which you can find on Amazon, or I've got it on Audible, which, if you go back and listen to the beginning, you can get this book for free on Audible, thanks to We Are Libertarians. We get the credit. But this book called The War of Art talks about resistance and procrastination and basically just doing it, and how organization is a form of procrastination, which is totally me.
Without a doubt.
I'm like, listen, I need to sit down and I need to organize all these files, and I can't do anything until I organize these files.
This is going to be bugging me, and right. I'll never get started.
Right, and then I spend 4 hours organizing files, and then I never actually get anything done. Because today, I mean, part of the irregularity of the last year was due to my new schedule and adjusting to it, where I went from getting a life of 10 hours of sleep to now 5 to 6 hours of sleep, and it's killed me. But I get home early.
Yeah.
So, like, I got home at 1 o'clock today, and I'm like, I legitimately have, like, 10 hours.
Beautiful sunny day, 60 degrees.
Like a spring sunny day. I could get so many things done today. I can clean the apartment. I can cook. I can take a nap. We're going to do the podcast. I can read. I can write. I can make a few upgrades to the Libertarian site. I go out and exercise and go for a walk in this beautiful day. I walk in the door, I lay down in my bed, I organize the apps on my iPad, and then I fall asleep for 3 hours. And then you're here. And then I managed to scarf down some SpaghettiOs with meatballs before you got here. But And that is generally my life. That is how it goes. I guess I just need to be more disciplined and diligent with life, but
or just enjoy it. Enjoy SpaghettiOs and meatballs.
That's part of it. I need to be more like Chris Peffers. I need to be more zen, man.
Those cops, man, in Ferguson, they're really bumming me out.
Yeah.
That's pretty fitting, given what happened last evening.
Oh, yeah. Touch on that briefly while I look this up.
Last night, there were some protesters across from the Ferguson Police Department. Granted, it's been quite hostile.
You don't say.
Yeah, and so two, and I forget where they're one was from another small town, not Ferguson, but a nearby town, and then the other was a member of the St. Louis PD, and they were outside the Ferguson Police Department, and they were both shot and killed by... I don't want to say two of the protesters, but two of the individuals that were amongst or within the proximity of the protesters.
Right.
And it was pretty shocking news because I haven't followed it, to be honest. I haven't followed it nearly as close as I had while it was all going on and prior to the release of the grand jury's findings.
Right.
And so I didn't realize that the level of... anger and violence was still so bitter, and then the report came out,
right?
And it is to the point of where it was before,
right?
It's not just, worse.
Yeah, it's escalating. I mean, for two police officers to get shot, you know, it's almost as much of a tragedy as, you know, a young black man being shot and killed.
Well, I mean, it's not like those two individuals were Darren Wilson,
right?
You're, you know,
that was my first immediate thought is. You have to be a special kind of idiot to hold... listen, I think many of the people in this audience read the report from the Justice Department that there was an institutionalized racism within the Ferguson PD. We've talked about that on our show. So if we know it, then I'm sure the citizens of Ferguson know it as well. So I don't blame citizens of Ferguson for having anger towards their police department. You know, we talk about this with government all the time. They get away with things because they can, because they have all the guns and they can bankrupt you and put you in jail. The government is force. But are you really going to achieve reform by shooting members of the people you're trying to reform? Like, if you're the person that pulled the trigger, if you're that individual, what were you thinking? Because then that just makes it harder for all the other people who are peaceful, who do want to see true reform. It makes it harder for those people to actually achieve anything.
Oh, yeah, because now you're at the point where you're going to have such surveillance on the protesters, and they're going to have to apply for the permits on any public grounds. And now there's probably justification for a denial of protest based on public safety.
Right.
You just made it that much harder.
Right. Aaron Ewert, stop snapping me during the... anyways, I should not look at... See, this is another problem. This phone. I have to get rid of the phone. I can't take it anymore. So, yeah, that's Ferguson. It's been lit on fire again. Before we move on, I want to take a special moment to thank a few special people. A few special, lovely people out in Wallland. You know, we've talked a little bit about Phyllis Klosinski's generosity towards the podcast. And over the last few episodes, we've just reminded you that we have a tip jar at the bottom of the WeAreLibertarians.com website.
Or purchase things from Amazon through...
I don't know if that link is active. It really didn't do much. And there's so many people using Amazon affiliates.
Yeah.
The thing that we've been most successful at is selling audiobooks. I mean, people go to Audible... I think it's audible.com/WAL, and you get a free, the link is on the website, you get a free month of Audible, which means you get a free audiobook, and then if you become a member that second month and you pay the $14, I think it is, then we get a portion of that, and so that has actually been really helpful in supporting We're Libertarian. It's awesome opening up your mailbox and seeing that month's hosting covered, you know.
Yeah.
And so we had a couple people send in PayPal donations, and so we want to thank Dustin Reed and Jason Doolittle for their generosity. Very cool of you guys. Really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you guys.
Like when I get that email, I'm just like, really? They like us. They really like us.
Was this a mistake?
Did they mean to send this to me? So thanks. Thank you guys for investing in We Are Libertarians. We really appreciate that. Listen, you don't have to just send us money, although we like that. You skip forward that 32-second long clip at the beginning of every episode. I know you do, because I do that on all the podcasts I list. But just go back and listen to it, and you can get, you know, books by Murray Rothbard, Mises, Cato, David Bose, all kinds of great libertarian audiobooks.
Who's got a new book out?
Yeah. I listen to libertarianism. I've got that. I've got all Ron Paul's books on Audible. Because I'm an Audible learner. Like, I'm the type of person where I learn everything from podcasts and listening to shows, and I love audiobooks. Like, for me, it's a struggle to sit down and read anymore. But if I listen to a podcast or an audiobook, I can consume the information like crazy. So yeah, check that out. Especially if you're, you don't know, you love podcasts, you'll love audiobooks, I promise.
Absolutely.
So, we got a couple big stories this week. This one's going to be, we were talking a little bit about how Wall has changed and the atmosphere here inside the Klosinski studios, behind the golden Klosinski microphone. we can be bought.
Absolutely.
No, she didn't buy anything.
Are you listening, Cokes?
She's just, yeah, that Coke bunny. Oh my God, I'd love to be a Cokehead. So... we were talking about how it's so much different without Gina here, first of all. Like, when Gina is here, it's like a party, man.
Oh, it is.
Like, it's fun. Like, she drives half the audience crazy, but for us, she's fun as hell to have here. and secondly, we used to talk a lot more current events than I think we do. Now we sort of talk more trends and, like, bigger ideas, and we don't talk as much politics because we really don't care as much about politics as we used to. But this one, we're going to talk about Hillary's emails and Rand Paul. Now, we tried to get the prom king of liberty on this episode.
But he was busy squatting 585 pounds.
Which, I'm just saying, I could probably do. And we went to school with a girl, who squatted 650 pounds.
Twice.
So, Creighton was very proud of himself when he announced that in We Are Libertarians chat this afternoon. And Greg and I immediately took a giant growler right all over that.
And he almost refused. It was almost the point of him refusing to acknowledge it.
He was so mad. I almost felt bad because he was so proud.
I know.
Like, this is a great achievement that he's been working towards. And Greg and I just take a giant dump all over it.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, that's almost good, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but there's a girl who did 650.
Yeah,
he's
twice.
He's like, I'll totally do that by next year. I'm like, yeah, this girl was little. I mean, she's not very big.
And you probably won't, Creighton. Don't worry.
Then he put it on Facebook on his profile, and then we immediately proceeded to take a giant dump.
We're good
on
friends.
It as well. Yeah, friends. Listen, I told him he should take a selfie in the mirror, in the gym mirror.
I almost just went ahead and photoshopped one.
He's a liberty bro.
He's a liberty, yeah, bro of liberty.
The prom king of liberty. He was going to join in, but he's got class tonight at the prestigious IUPUI.
I wonder what class it is.
I don't know. Probably something with the economics. Something stupid like
no,
that.
No, he's doing computer science now.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, a genius.
Yeah.
And then he's going out to visit the prom queen of liberty.
That's right. He'll be gone for a week.
Yeah, so he was not available to talk Rand boners with us.
Which is shocking. Whitney Davis, you have killed Creighton's, I guess, what, fascination, smittenness with Rand. You've totally tampered down his Rand bonerness.
With what? What, just that phrase? Like, he doesn't want to talk about it, or what?
I don't know. I mean, he in the old days, if we had said, hey, we're doing a Rand Paul show, Creighton would have driven all the way here from D.C.
You're right.
And now, Whitney's ruined him.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. I can't believe that there is another human being on this earth that Creighton loves more than Rand Paul.
It's shocking.
The engagement is imminent.
I know.
I'm just saying.
What do you think the wedding will be?
I think it'll be a beach wedding.
A beach wedding? Does Arkansas have beaches?
Shirtless. on Creighton's part. Let's not be gross. Not that that'd be gross, but you know what I'm saying.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, this isn't a brutalist group. No. The reason we joke about that is it's just like the old Creighton joke of, you know, we're 98% funded by Young Americans for Liberty, so let's talk politics. And it would drive him crazy. And so we always tease Creighton about his marital situation.
Absolutely.
Because it's awkward. It's not, you know, it's not appropriate in any way, shape, or form, but... What about Gregory says appropriate in any way?
We are all of the irreverency modern politics deserves.
Right. And it's, listen, if you want to be in, wall life is rough.
It is.
It's a step above thug life.
You get hazed.
Yeah.
You know, all of your ideas get challenged, memed, photoshopped.
You wouldn't believe the photoshops that come through the wall chat that are never going to be seen by the day of light.
They should be.
Oh, my face should never be on some of these things.
They absolutely should be, but they're not for general viewing.
Hey, if you want to get engaged, we started a Facebook group and we linked it up on the Facebook page. Right now it's got like 18 members. We're not looking for it to be big or anything. It's a closed group. But it is for people who want to weigh in on some of the stories that we're sharing, share stories with us, ask us questions, just sort of like a little incubator, a little think tank for the show. So it kind of keeps us in tune with what you want to hear about, stories that we might miss, stories that Greg and I find like dozens of links a day that we've been putting in this wall chat with five other people. And so I just decided, let's expand that out to people who are interested in seeing those links and kind of discussing and meeting other walletarians, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, there's so many different viewpoints, and I find it helpful already just with those involved. I've already had seen an issue from a different perspective than I had prior to.
Yeah,
and I really like that. I like to be surprised with a viewpoint that challenges my own.
If you... are Facebook challenged and can't find that link, send the Facebook page, We Are Libertarians, a message, and we'll add you to it, because you have to be added to. This is, and listen, assholes will be deleted.
Absolutely, no trolls.
And what is the definition of asshole? Whatever I deem it to be.
Exactly.
Because this is Dear Leader's domain, okay? If you violate it, you will be kicked out.
Absolutely.
I'm looking at you, Ryan Ripley. You're on thin ice.
Are you calling out Ripley?
Ripley, thin ice. Listen,
what did
I
he
said
do?
No assholes in the group, so it was a stretch of him getting in the first place.
What did he do?
Nothing. He didn't do anything. I just needed a scapegoat to yell at.
I was going
to
say, he's always so nice and positive.
I know. That's why it's fun calling him an asshole. Because he's the exact opposite of that. I would never dare say, like, Joe Ruiz, you're an asshole to his face.
No, you'd just make awkward. Fun of his ethnicity.
Right. Those Puerto Ricans. I'm just kidding. that might be the first time I've ever actually referenced his ethnicity correctly.
It is. I was so stunned you even knew what it was. Unless that was a shot in the dark.
Mexican or anything. No. I know what he is. I know what he is. He's on my list.
He's tracked.
So let's get to Hillary. Good old Clinton scandal.
It feels like it's 1990s again, doesn't it?
It feels like it's the 2000s again.
Oh,
feels like it's the 2010s again.
It is amazing how... I'm stunned, quite frankly. When this story first broke, I didn't care.
Me neither.
I assumed as much. I assumed this goes on way more than is ever reported on a grand scale. And it's just kind of ho-hum.
So let's explain what happened. Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State.
Secretary of State, and Hillary Clinton was, she had a private server at her home in New York.
So did Bill Clinton. Name is Monica. Thank you, I'll be here all week.
But, and so she was using, I think it was, HRD... 022 at clintonmail.com or something like that.
All right.
And it was Gawker first reported the for
Can you imagine the spam that comes in and out of clintonmail.com?
Oh my gosh. Well, that's the thing, and I was like, well, is this a big deal? Cuz I assumed as much. This is probably going to happen. The reason it's going to happen is cuz people are going to want to CYA. If something like Benghazi happens, they're going to want to be able to delete the evidence. You know, any punishment you could get for misusing email this way would never be as bad as if details came out from Benghazi and you were found negligent or something along those lines.
It is not illegal what Hillary Clinton did. Hillary Clinton is certainly allowed to use a private email to do government business. I think only
she's not supposed to, though.
She's not supposed to, but it's not technically illegal. Any government, any executive branch employee, I think it's every employee of the executive branch, is supposed to, but especially the high level, Secretary of State, you know,
Cabinet members,
cabinet members, the president, the vice president, although Obama's really the first president that has used email in any way. And he probably uses it sparingly.
Oh, yeah. There's no incentive to.
Right.
Know, what is the incentive to actually email?
So, trust me, I hate email. If I could get away without even, like, Facebook message me or text me. That's how you should get a hold of me. Sorry, I sounded like Lindsey Graham there for a minute. If I get your message and I deem it responsible enough, then and I deem you worthy of a response, I will email you back.
It never occurred to me how much he sounds like Zach Galifianakis in that election movie with Will Ferrell.
Yes.
I mean, that is Lindsey Graham. I wonder if that's who he modeled his speech pattern after.
So Hillary has this email server and said that she set it up this way out of convenience. Because it was too...
One phone,
and apparently... But
that's all BS.
2 weeks ago, she said in a speech that she had she carries a BlackBerry iPad and an iPhone.
And a mini iPad.
And she's not even in the government anymore. So that clearly is hogwash. So what she had to do is turn over all government-related emails to the State Department... Or forward it to her government account, at least what she is saying.
Yeah, that's the thing, is you're supposed to include your government account in all communications.
Right.
And when you're communicating, the thing is, too, when you're communicating with another government employee or someone in the State Department, there's going to be a record of anything sent from a private account. So
yeah.
That is one thing. They should be able to find any record sent from Hillary's account.
And so she was turning over emails, and she was asked by the State Department. The State Department was taking extra steps to make sure that all of this was archived. She was cooperating fully. I forget exactly what she said in the press conference. So when I heard the president say, you know, she's cooperated fully, I don't see what the big deal is, I was like, okay, that all kind of sounds legit. And he gave a fairly decent explanation of it. And I took Obama at his word.
That was a mistake.
So then the news comes out that Hillary has printed off 55,000 pages of emails. Or was it 55,000 emails?
55,000 pages of emails that have already been poured through by her aides and staff.
Right.
So basically, they are selecting what gets sent and what can't be misconstrued.
Now, her justification for not sending over everything and just turning over hard drives and a searchable database is that there are things like condolence letters and wedding plans for Chelsea and all these other things that are private that she doesn't want out there, and that most people would agree that's private. I agree. I don't necessarily care about Chelsea's wedding plans. I don't think historians 50 years from now will give a crap about that. They'll want to know what happened with Benghazi. But that is the problem. People want to know what happened with Benghazi. And so she prints off these emails and forklifts it over to the State Department, where they have this archival project going on. And so I am sure that they have very limited resources, because they're not expecting 55,000 printed pages of emails. They're expecting a keyword searchable database of emails. And so now it is going to take the State Department years and millions of dollars to search through Hillary's emails. And it's not keyword searchable. But more importantly, it will be years before those documents can be released to the press.
Now, here's the question.
Congress.
Could you subpoena it?
The AP has filed a FOIA request for the emails. Now, with the FOIA request, you can submit your FOIA request, and they have to, within 48 hours, respond and say, yes, we got your FOIA request, if they got the FOIA request. So then you have the ability to FOIA again in a time-sensitive manner. They never have to give you the information. So the State Department has to send back to the AP, yes, we got your FOIA request, we're working on it. They never have to actually give you the information. So that's how the Freedom of Information Act works. Now, you could probably subpoena those emails.
I was going to say, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Daryl Issa.
Now, and Trey Gowdy, mm-hmm. Who looks like a real weirdo to me. But he's right up there with Louis Gohmert in the Weirdo Hall of Fame. But I just don't know enough about Trey Gowdy beyond like what little I see of him on TV. And he looks like a real weirdo. But I know a lot of libertarians seem to like him. But anytime there's like a pit bull like that, I always go, okay, I get that this feels like an act. You don't feel genuine to me. It feels like you're up to something. What are you up to, Trey Gowdy? You're from South Carolina, and we know nothing good comes out of South Carolina except crab cakes. Oh, wait, that's Maryland. Nothing good comes out of South Carolina. So you probably could. The State Department, I would imagine, would counter with, no.
State secrets.
This needs to be redacted. There could be sensitive information in here. We need to blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with them vetting it, reading through it all. You know, but I would think you would be able to actually request the server, the physical server, because it's still up. It's still operational. And it would be evidence in a pending case.
That was one of the questions that I had. What did they do with those email servers? Did they destroy the servers?
No, it's still at her house. Her network's still set up. It's a little hodgepodge home network, which, more than anything, that's a security breach like none other.
Totally.
Are you kidding me? They probably hack, and it doesn't get reported, the government's cyber network, let alone Hillary Clinton's one server in their house in Westchester. And the thing is, she did such a colossally bad job at defending herself in the press conference and lied, clearly lied. Especially when she claimed that it had personal communications between her and her husband on it. When Bill Clinton has said publicly many times that he has only sent 2 emails in his entire life.
I got the impression that she was saying that we had sent email from Bill and I to other people. So I got the gist, like, now I may be wrong because I just saw this in passing. But I got the impression that she was saying, like, we sent condolences from Bill and I. Where, you get that email from your aunt every Christmas where you're like, your uncle and I love you. It's like, my uncle didn't even read this. Don't lie. He's out playing with his trains in the garage.
No, yeah.
You know what I mean?
But regardless,
only Bill's not playing with trains.
Yeah, and Bill doesn't use email, which makes perfect sense because giving Bill email is like giving Anthony Weiner Tinder. Like, you just do not do it. Or Grindr. You're asking for an absolute chaos.
I could now sign up for AshleyMadison.com.
Exactly. Can you imagine giving Bill Clinton an email address on a private server?
She'll never know I went to BangBrothers.com. Mia Khalifa's quite the young lady.
Yeah, exactly. And then next thing you know, he's inviting her to Westchester. and it's a Arab female summit.
I want you to know I care very much about the Iranians. I'm Jordanian, sir. Them too.
I like them all.
Take off that top. So, yeah.
But it's, and then, what makes this all worse is that it's a Clinton in a public scandal, and it's not like there isn't a precedence for lying.
Yeah. Well, it was her first press conference in 2 years, and if you read Politico this week, Mike Allen had a piece about the warring factions within the Clinton camp between the new guy and the old guard. And they wanted, the old guard wanted her to, soft sell it by doing a sit-down interview with, Katie Couric or somebody. And the young guy and Hillary wanted to do a press conference. And then the old guard was like, you haven't done one in 2 years. You haven't, ease back into it a little bit, especially since you're announcing in a few months. Which now the timetable for Hillary announcing her presidency, apparently because of all this, has now been pushed up to 2 to 4 weeks from now.
She has to.
And so she's hiring 40 new people in Iowa at the end of Iowa because she can't tiptoe around. She needs to throw all the money and resources that she has to do damage control now. She can't do that if she's hiding the fact that she's running for president. So Politico magazine had an article called Go to Hell about Hillary's attitude in the press conference, which was sort of like, it doesn't matter what I say, there's going to be a scandal. It's the same old story. The press is after the Clintons, so why should I give them anything? Here's what happened. And if you don't like the explanation, go to hell. Because I'm tired of being persecuted. I'm tired of living this life. You're all just out to get me, so whatever.
No, yeah. That's the thing, though, is the press has always been sympathetic toward Hillary.
Right. Well, they don't feel that way.
Yeah.
But they're the type of both of them are the type of people that, you know, they can't see their own mistakes.
You know? No, but...
Especially, I'm sure Hillary can see Bill's mistakes and points it out quite often.
No doubt, but Bill Clinton is the ultimate charmer. He's Teflon. Right. Nothing sticks. He's
likable, man.
He's the most, and Hillary is the polar opposite.
Right. How many times have you thought during Bush and Obama, God, I miss Bill Clinton?
Oh.
Like, I saw him in person in Greenfield, Indiana during the 08 stop, and he just was, man, he was magic, he was smooth, he was funny.
He's genuine. He's genuinely a poonhound, and he's genuinely a guy that likes people. He's energized by people. He's a smart guy. You know, he believes the world's a little bit, he believes in a different worldview than I do or you do. But at the end of the day, if you didn't talk politics, what other person would you want to spend the day with that's been president of the United States?
Bush kind of has that quality. I would think, you know, we could talk about painting or, you know, feet or whatever he's into. I don't know. Other than that, I would never want to spend any time with Jimmy Carter, or I don't think I'd want to spend time with Barack Obama.
No way.
No. He doesn't seem likable. He has that thing about Hillary that I don't like, which is I'm a little bit better than you.
The arrogance is and that's what I've thought is the biggest downfall of the, or will be the biggest downfall of this entire scandal getting legs and getting traction.
Right.
Is that even though she hasn't said it publicly that she's the nominee, there's just been this entitlement. Even against Barack Obama, there was an entitlement that it was her time. She's going to be the nominee. He needs to wait his turn.
Right.
She is perpetually, it's my turn. I'm going to shut anyone else out. And when you compound that with arrogance, that arrogant idea, and now
unlikability.
It's, yep, unlikability. And then now rules don't apply because why don't you trust me? Why wouldn't you trust me? I'm Hillary Clinton. I'm going to be the next president of the United States.
Right. I was Secretary of State.
Yeah.
And that is definitely what she's saying, which is you don't need access to those other 30,000 emails. You'll just have to trust me. Go to hell. And you don't say that to the press, because the press has a Clinton scandal on their hands, and you have had your numbers of likability and trustworthiness and fitness for office have been rapidly declining for 2 years. So, you know, you're not in the catbird seat as much as you'd like to think that you are.
And it's always been a false number because of Bill.
Right.
Her likability, her approval numbers, that is a false number. It's not a real number. If she was Elizabeth Warren, because that's who she most closely compares to.
Right.
And then you're in the 20s in likability.
Yeah.
And you're fake Cherokee. You know, the Navajo or whatever she claims you. I think it was Cherokee, which was astounding given she was from Boston.
Listen, I'm 1/16th Cherokee in Choctaw. You can't see it. I'm as pale. I have ham-colored skin.
True, but you didn't claim that you're from Massachusetts, where there aren't any Cherokees.
I
look it.
You're swarthy.
Yeah, swarthy.
Yeah, you've got that.
I'm a mixed breed.
I wasn't gonna say anything.
But it's funny. I think this could end up actually costing her the nomination.
I won't go that far, because the Clintons are survivors more than anything else. And
Bill is, because of his likability.
Man, she survived Benghazi. She got somebody killed through her inaction. I mean, that more than anything, I think, is going to dog her. I think the thing that gets her the nomination is if there's nobody, if somebody like a Martin O'Malley, who seems to be picking up a little bit of buzz thanks to a puff piece in the
but three links on Drudge today.
Yeah, but that's also Drudge being Drudge, trying to go after Clinton a little bit.
Oh, no, I mean, for sure. But
he's using his power.
But he gets a billion page views. So, right. You know, it doesn't really matter if it's manipulated or not.
So, you know, there was a puff piece that Drudge linked to in the South Carolina newspaper. Martin O'Malley is the former Baltimore mayor, two-term governor of Maryland. Apparently has a Blue Dog Democrat feel to him, decent economic track record in Maryland, and could be a contender against Hillary.
And he's young, he's charismatic, he's a great speaker. He is in an Irish rock band. He's the lead singer and vocalist.
Yeah. gives me a John Edwards feel.
It's, I don't know. Have you watched him speak?
Not at length, just little clips.
He's a little bit too nerdy and wonky to me to be Edwards in that, you know, that
right.
kind of fake charm, that Southern yeah. laid on charm.
Right. Anytime there's a young wunderkind, I just don't trust it.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something about him to me that feels more Northeastern liberal Kennedy than he does a John Edwards.
So we'll see. I mean, Drudge is going to do whatever he can to help this guy.
Yeah.
Because it's good for, it's always good when you have competition.
Absolutely. It's for Hillary, though, she can't afford that. And I only say that because Hillary is so bad in debates. She's so bad in public display. I've never seen Hillary Clinton where I watched her speak or I watched her in an interaction and said, wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, it comes off as shrill, and I know that that definitely has, you know, oh, the guy is saying that the woman is shrill. I mean, it definitely has that feel. I totally get that, but there's something about Hillary that just hits me in the place where I go back to my childhood and my mom is yelling at me, like, and I just have, like, an adverse reaction to when she is talking. I just, there's something about her that... Like, and don't get me wrong, I love my mom, but I don't like my mom when she's yelling at me and I'm eight, you know?
it's that condescending scold.
Right, yeah, you know? That's kind of what it is.
And every time I hear her speak, it's that she's annoyed she's even doing it. She's never she's never at an interview with a Katie Couric and appreciative.
Right.
You know, you are talking to Katie Couric. Katie Couric has, you know, at the time had probably one of the largest audiences on the planet, and she's willing to give you this as a platform, and you just couldn't be less interested.
Right. It's something you've got to do.
And so I think that her margin of error is way smaller than most are assuming.
Right.
And I think this was pretty good evidence of it because, you know, the thing about did she violate a law? It's maybe. You know, I kind of did some research on this, and she was pretty specific. She fired the Kenyan ambassador for using this for sensitive but unclassified information via personal email. They fired the Kenyan ambassador for it. And then she, in the press conference, it got brought up, and then she tried to dodge by saying that's not what the report said and the findings. And then she sent out, when she took office, she sent out an email explicitly forbidding this, any personal use of email.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and the way that it's the rule, the governing body on this is actually funny. The National Archives and Records Administration is who adopted these regulations in 95. And so it says that
wait. Who was president then? Go ahead.
Yeah, Slick Willie. Yeah.
I want to collect all your emails.
Yeah, I mean it's the totally though it's to prevent something like this. That's the entire reason. If you can't claim to be transparent, you can't claim to do any...
Right.
You know, you've neutered any argument she could talk about civil libertarian reforms on surveillance and spying.
Right.
You know, she's acted evasive.
Something that she has direct control over. She did the opposite of what she'd be saying she'd do.
And she's caught on video contradicting herself. She's... It's a nightmare for her because she can't save it like Bill could. Bill looked right in the camera, put his thumb up, gave the I did not, you know.
He can't say, I did not have textual relations with that server.
Exactly. And Hillary, what she's committed is far worse, but by her bungled handling of it and then not giving any Democrat advisors and potential media consultants a heads up on this, because they've known about it since August. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, they've known about this since August. It's been floating around. And so she decided the best way to do it was to not give anyone heads up, not give anyone explicit directions on how to handle it on Fox, whenever a Democrat, when a Bob, you know, Bob Beckel,
yeah,
those types, Juan Williams, those types of individuals, they didn't give any advance notice. And so everyone has bungled it. No one's handled it well. And there should never be a conversation. All the early talk was of Elizabeth Warren, but she promised her a position probably labor or
interior. Yeah.
In order not to run. And so Martin O'Malley's a nobody. He's a Mike Pence. Like, no one knows who he is outside of his state. But now this guy's got he's got traction.
Now there's blood in the water.
So now Joe Biden's starting to show up in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And where, Joe Biden, as awful as he, or, you know, as goofy as he is and all the flubs he makes, he's way more likable than Hillary.
Oh, he's Uncle Joe.
He is. He shakes every hand, kisses every baby.
He fondles every woman, you know.
You know.
Hide your kids, hide your wife.
It's, and he doesn't mean it, because I don't think he's creepy like he actually acts on it.
Right.
He just has no sense of self-awareness or self-control.
He has no, Joe Biden, there are people in my life like Joe Biden, they have no sense of personal space. If you told them that they were a close talker, they'd go, I had no idea. I am 65 years old and no one has ever told me. You know, he's got no sense of personal space. He's always touching somebody. He's one of those guys. Like, I don't feel like he's a sexual predator.
No,
like,
you not know, at like, all.
You know, but then again, I didn't think Bill Cosby was a sexual predator, and he's raping half the women in Hollywood.
True. It would shock me with Joe, because
it would have come out by now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's just, he's America's Uncle Creepy. And he just, but he's not like a real creepy. He's not like scary creepy. He's just, I just wish Uncle Joe wouldn't rub my shoulders at dinner. I just don't need that.
He's unfiltered, uncensored, and it's, you know, for any administration, it's enormous liability.
Right.
But part of that's his charm.
How do you file a sexual harassment claim on the Vice President of the United States?
Yeah, well,
it didn't go well for Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah, and half the time it's while he's introducing new House members and new secretary, or introducing new secretaries.
I just want to say, you have a lovely wife. Never mind. I'm gonna stop there. I almost took it too far. Too much brutalism for me.
But the thing about Joe is, Joe would be the oldest by a big margin, but he's got the exact same fundraising network as the Clintons. So and he's been vetted. They know you know all the stuff in Joe's background. You know the plagiarism. You know calling Barack Obama clean and articulate, but that's been put to bed.
Stand up, Chuck.
Yeah, and I think the president would support Joe Biden over Hillary Clinton if push came to shove and it was an actual primary race. If he made a call. You know, which he'd probably not. But
there has been uneasiness between Clinton and the Clintons and Obama the entire time. I mean, the Muslim socialist stuff, is Obama really a Christian?
That's the Clintons.
That's the Clintons. Is he actually a citizen? That's the Clintons.
That all originates from the primary.
Right. You know, it didn't come from
Karl Rove.
Orly Tate. That's her name, the crazy woman.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, Clinton or Biden, there was about 2 weeks ago a report saying, you know, Biden has done nothing to get fundraisers. He's not going to fundraising dinners. He's got no real stops in Iowa or New Hampshire. He's got no staff. You know, the vast difference between him and Hillary and their organizations at this point. Hillary's got millions in PAC money, and the groundwork has kind of been laid.
But Joe is now doing the circuit.
Yeah, so that's
which should be a big sign. Like, he's going to be in Iowa, or he just was in Iowa, and he does populism way better than Hillary. The thing about Barack Obama and Hillary is they're Northeastern elitists.
Right.
They're the ivory tower. I know better than you. I'm going to tell you, you know, that's that typical intellectual progressive. Joe Biden is the factory worker union guy that he wants to get them better benefits, you know, collective.
He's the guy. He represents the guy. Old middle class Joe represents the guy that Hillary really was getting a lot of support from in 2008. I mean, here in Indiana, it was a very close primary between Barack and Hillary. And many, many people did Operation Many.
I was a member of.
Did you vote for or against Hillary?
I voted for Hillary to keep it bloodbath.
Right. And, you know, so here in Indiana, a lot, I mean, I saw her speak at Ben Davis here in town, and I saw, which is a bigger high school here on the west side of Indianapolis, very, I wouldn't say urban, but very blue collar area, a lot of blue collar students. And they were definitely out in force. And then out in Greenfield, which is more of a rural county, a rural area of Indiana where Bill was, very blue-collar crowd. But that's kind of Indiana.
That's our makeup.
It was a lot of lower to middle-class white people. in Greenfield, Indiana. You don't say. but yeah, so it would be interesting to see if Joe can knock off a lot of Hillary's natural supporters, and then who is she left with? Hillary, you know, because of that campaign against Barack Obama, I don't know how much, the Democrat Party is made up of different coalitions. The Democrat Party is different than the Republican Party, where the Republican Party centers around an ideology. Now, that ideology is not really any kind of intellectual ideology anymore. It's really the ideology espoused by talk radio. But the Democrats are different in the fact that they have a coalition party. And it's not necessarily around ideas. They have, you know, certainly progressive ideas, liberal ideas, but many different groups. But a lot of their network is built up of different groups. LGBT, the black groups, the Latino groups, the... think of all the unions, for instance. I can't think of very many groups. And Greg went to the bathroom. But there was an instance where, you know, all these different groups got rewarded a cabinet position in the Obama administration, but he forgot to appoint a Latino.
Yeah.
And so that's why Sotomayor was the first pick for the Supreme Court. So,
what do you think?
I don't know how many of those different coalitions Hillary can get. Joe may challenge her for the unions.
Yeah, and she'd really have to tumble. Like, it's not there yet. And granted, right, we're getting so close to everything, but she's one big mess up away from the DNC looking around and saying,
who else?
We got to have a backup plan just in case. Because if she starts losing in head-to-head polling with, like, if she were to, in a matchup, be behind Rand Paul nationally, they'd have to find a new candidate.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she should out-poll Rand by 11%.
Mm-hmm.
Or 12. And if that doesn't happen, Martin O'Malley will do well. I think he's a young, exciting Democrat. There's two Hispanic, one's a mayor and one is he a state senator? They were both at the Democratic National Convention in 2012 and were kind of considered rock stars. The Castro brothers, Raul and they're going to be the next political rock stars out of Texas. As far as Hillary, I think it's a real gamble to just assume for the DNC that she is going to cruise through everything. I mean, you know, when you get the Clintons, you're getting controversy.
Right.
She has made so many enemies. She has acted arrogantly. She's acted dismissive. She stepped on people's toes. She's not a good fundraiser. She isn't an inspiring speaker. Like, I feel like so much of her position is being married to Bill. And I know it sounds horrible and sexist, but...
Well, that was really kind of the smears against her when she ran for Senate in New York. She wasn't a New Yorker. What had she done? What resume did she have? You know, she hadn't practiced law in forever. She was just married to Bill, and so...
She's no doubt an extremely smart woman, you know, Yale Law, where they
She's now accomplished, and she did accomplish many... Now, nothing that libertarians would find, you know, interesting or good.
Well, I say, like, is her track record as Secretary of State impressive?
No, not at all.
I can't point to a single thing she did well.
I mean, as a senator, she had access to a lot of prestigious positions and got, you know, because she was so well connected.
I just don't even know what major legislation she authored. She voted for the war in Iraq, which should be a major.
Well, but see, that's the beauty of where she's at now, is it's all kind of been, that's all been debated. It's all been vetted.
Yeah, it's been vetted.
You know, what are we going to do? Are we going to argue the same stuff that Barack Obama argued against in 2008?
No. But I mean, now her competitors got something to, you know, the emails, the hiding. The way she acted, she just got terrible advice. The way you handle that is you hand over the server, you have your aides go through there, and you provide context around anything that could be misconstrued, and you hand it right to the secretary, or, you know, the State Department, and have them vet it. And then talk about it until your heart's content, and then you look like you're honest and sincere. When you evade, it looks horrible.
Right. She was on, looking up on Wikipedia, Committee on Budget, Committee on Armed Services, Committee on Environmental and Public Works, Committee on Health, Education, and Labor and Pensions, Special Committee on Aging, and Commission on Secretary of Cooperation in Europe. Strongly supported the 01 military action in Afghanistan, voted in favor of the 02 Iraq War Resolution, made many trips overseas. Senator Clinton voted against President Bush's two major tax cuts, voted against John Roberts, called for the FTC to investigate how hidden sex scenes showed up in a controversial video game, introduced the Family Entertainment Protection Act, so she voted to censor video games, looking to establish a progressive infrastructure to that rival of American conservatism. She helped Podesta found Center for American Progress, Media Matters, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Helped Harry Reid create a Senate war room to handle daily political messaging. So she then won. That was her first term. Those are her achievements in the first term. Posed the Iraq war surge. Called on Attorney Gonzalez to resign. And reached a peak with the liquidity crisis. Clinton supported the bailouts. That is all that Wikipedia lists as her time in the Senate.
So no major legislation?
Nothing that Wikipedia lists, at least.
I mean, she has such gravitas and is considered a, you know, leader of the party. Where does it come from?
Right. connections? I mean, the Clinton network is very powerful, but nobody really thought that anybody could ever take on. It had been so long since a Democrat had been president and had been a powerful president. I mean, Carter, if you really think about it, LBJ was the last powerful Democratic president, and then there was Carter, and he was a one-termer. And so when the Clintons came in, he won on a fluke. Like, everybody thought, there's no way that a Democrat can win the White House. Because they handle the House and Senate, and then the Republicans get the White House. And so Clinton, if you actually go back and look at Clinton Gore 92 ads, they're running on welfare reform, and they sound like Republicans. The Clinton of 92 is so vastly different than Hillary Clinton of 2014. It's unreal.
To call Bill Clinton a progressive is a stretch.
Not even a close.
No. Yeah. Nixon was to the left of him.
Right. He definitely. And, you know, Clinton came in and managed bureaucracy, and this has long been one of the criticisms and comparisons between Obama and Clinton. Clinton knew how to manage bureaucracy because of his two terms as governor in Arkansas. And Obama has never managed anything beyond a small community organization and a classroom. And so Clinton was able to navigate the bureaucracies and tweak things in a way that someone like Mitch Daniels would have been successful at. Mitch Daniels had run companies. You know, we're seeing this in Indiana. Mitch Daniels had run companies and had managed the budget office for Bush and came in and managed the bureaucracy and reformed Indiana government, where his predecessor, Mike Pence, who was a talk radio show host and then a congressman, has really struggled to do all of that.
Yeah.
And you see it with Clinton, where Clinton and Bush were able to come in and reform government to their liking, not to ours, where Obama has struggled to. He may have had vision in 2008. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think we all kind of have an idea of what he'd like to see government be. But
he's got a false belief in its effectiveness.
Right. And he no longer, I have long said this about Barack Obama. You know, Bill Clinton was the type of guy who said, I want what's pragmatic. I want to do the most good I can with government. This is my definition of good. Here's how I'm going to tweak it to get it. I'm going to create triangulation and do all these things to get it. Barack Obama, I think in his head, had a lofty vision of what government is and should be. And I'm going to get the bully pulpit and mold government to my vision by speaking it into the universe And everyone will see how brilliant my ideas are, and they will just adjust accordingly.
And he's so convinced of his own ability to persuade someone with facts, you know, and right. logic, and this is why this is the right idea and the right way to go about it. And he just, it's that idealism kills everyone that goes into that job.
And he has become a shell of his former self. He has no desire to do the job of president.
Nope.
Where Bill Clinton, at the end of his presidency, who was I listening to? I was listening to a podcast or watching something. Oh, it was a Tony Robbins thing. Tony Robbins was on the Tim Ferriss podcast. And he called Tony Robbins, the self-help guru, to come and talk to him on a golf course in the middle of the Lewinsky scandal. And this was like 99. And obviously the 2000 elections were gearing up. And, you know, he's like, you know, Tony, if I could, I'd run for a third term. And Tony Robbins is like, go play golf. What are you doing? Why would you want to do this anymore? Like, this is awful. You're calling Tony Robbins for help.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of funny. But, you know, he loved the job. And,
oh, yeah.
And I think I don't get the sense that Hillary has the same enthusiasm for the job that Bill does. I get the feeling that she is more worn down by public service like Obama.
I thought she looked, and I don't mean this as a critical thing, I thought she looked so exhausted and already beaten down. Yeah.
Well, there's the mysterious illness stuff that happened when she was Secretary of State.
Yeah.
Some of that you just kind of, I think when Hillary runs, we're going to see more calls for her health records. I think it will be an unprecedented level of requesting health records from a candidate.
And she just doesn't look like she's got the. She's not ready to storm into it.
She had fire in the belly in 2008,
and it's like she's being carried into it right now, or like, you know, slowly, begrudgingly walking into it.
Almost, and I don't mean to compare her to George Washington, but almost that attitude of I'll do it because there's no one else.
Yep. And that sense of entitlement that she feels that she should get it. But at the same time, I don't know if it's not the fire of 08, though.
No. And also, I need this for my legacy. I've got a lot to prove. I want to do this for womankind.
Women. Yeah.
I mean, you know.
I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah. I think in terms of feminism, in terms of what women can achieve, I mean, there's no doubt that she's already an enormous figure in breaking glass ceilings. I mean, from 92, the reason she was the most polarizing first lady we've ever had. Forget Michelle Obama. Like, you know, she bucked a lot of trends.
She was Eleanor Roosevelt in the modern media world.
Exactly right. Yeah,
you know?
Exactly right.
Like, just in letting her handle healthcare, the first lady.
Right.
I mean, that's unimaginable to me.
Think about all the jokes of how, you know, and some of our younger listeners may not even know this, but like the joke at the time was really Hillary was the president and Bill was just like the figurehead.
She was Dick Cheney.
Right.
In Bush's first run.
Totally. Yep. She was Dick Cheney the whole time. So I don't know. I think it's an interesting dynamic. The Clintons are always interesting. They're just a hot mess always. But the more Bill I can get, the more, you know,
the more fun politics is, the more often Bill Clinton's involved. and that works both ways. It works when, you know, you see there is one thing I have a great respect for his mind, because he has one of the best and most sharp anticipatory, political minds I've ever seen.
He's a great strategist.
He's unbelievable. He could run his own campaign. He didn't need Carville. He didn't need, you know, Carville was really great at what he did. Stephanopoulos, that whole crew.
Mm-hmm.
They've all moved on. But he was the thought leadership on that campaign. He was the idea, the triangulation. I mean, him and Dick Morris, the toe sucker.
Right.
He is just a brilliant political strategist, and it's the one thing I bet he's ever found in his life that was challenging.
Yeah. No, I think the Clintons have always, Mark Penn
yep.
with Microtrends, I think was...
He's their pollster.
They have always attracted interesting, sharp talent around them, and it'll be interesting to see if she can do that again. Now, my personal feeling is that it doesn't matter who gets elected president. It just doesn't matter to me. Like, to me, it's at this point, watching politics is soap opera. And so they make a great figure. Like, and I think that leads into our next topic, as long as you're done with Hillary.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because I think that perfectly leads into...
to Rand.
Yeah, and the letter.
And the letter. You know, my general feeling is that it doesn't matter, you know, Rand Paul is not the great hope of the Republic. Like, neither was Ron Paul. Ron Paul was the great hope for the Republic in the sense that people like you and I are sitting here because of Ron Paul.
Without a doubt.
And there are many, many people who are listening to this podcast who are involved in the Liberty Movement at this point. Organizations have been created on the backs of that 2008 run and bolstered by the 2012 run. You know, Ron Paul is an important figure because he lit the brush fire of liberty again.
He's the shoulders we all stand on.
He really kind of took... He is the modern Goldwater, but without the crushing defeat electorally to LBJ. And so...
And he didn't, you know, leave public life. He's still out there. He still shows up. The guy's got more fight in him and more passion for this cause than any individual for any cause ever.
And that is the difference between Rand and Ron. Ron has... Ron loves the philosophy of it and wanted to be a voice for the libertarian philosophy inside the government. And it is always so amazing to me how many black and yellow anarchists who hate voting and think voting is awful, but they love Ron Paul.
They love Ron. The Ronimal.
You know, but Ron still was a political creature, and Rand is even more of a political creature. Where Ron loved philosophy, Rand loves the strategery of politics.
He spent a life watching his dad be a martyr.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a smart guy, obviously, and he's passionate about it, too, no doubt. I don't doubt that for a second.
Right.
But he will play the game. At least that's what I believe. I don't think his beliefs are a bit different than his dad's. I think he believes every single thing his dad believes, but he will make the compromise. He'll take the baby steps. He'll support that compromise and play the game if it gets him in a position where he can affect change.
Ron has told us that himself, both in the interview that we did with him, check the feed, and then to you in person.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that for a second, which is why I'm hesitant. It's not that I get it. People want to bash Rand, especially libertarians. They can't wait to bash him because he talks about Kurdistan. You know, he talks about, you know, giving them a country, and that would be an antithesis to someone like Ron Paul. You know, that's direct intervention.
Sure.
And I get it, but... In order to get the nomination, he's got to convince neocons, he's got to convince Christian conservatives, he's got to convince establishment Republicans, the money, Sheldon Adelson he had to sit down with, and they had to, you know, otherwise he was going to, you know, the rumor was Adelson was going to bury him with money and his negative ads. If he doesn't play the game, he doesn't want to live his dad's life.
Yeah, I mean, my view on libertarians in general is there's many different types of libertarians. I mean, if you go to our YouTube page and look through, I think it might be in the basics of libertarianism, but it's definitely in the philosophy of liberty playlists. It's called Ron Paul and the Six Types of Libertarians, and it kind of discusses the different veins. I guess we might fit best into the cosmotarian strain with reason. You know, we're a little bit more practical, kind of here's what we can do now, and here's how we move it forward, and here's solutions, working within the modern-day framework, but still having that libertarian principle, more of a directional approach, as opposed to the destination libertarian who says, I'm just going to say, you know, and I move towards this every day. It's like, I don't give a crap what everybody else says or does. Politics is irrelevant. This is what we need now. You know, while admitting, I admit that that's not necessarily possible. We're not going to wake up tomorrow and have a totally voluntarist society.
Yeah.
Not possible. Not without a lot of pain.
Yeah. And then a strong man rising and, you know.
Right. And so Rand Paul, to me, any type of libertarian is good. If you're the Christopher Cantwell sitting there being an asshole, and I emphasize that with
heavy emphasis
on the asshole, and you are writing your anarchist, atheist, asshole blog, good. There's value in what you're doing if you can get an audience. If you are in the Libertarian Party and you're Roger Paxton and you're on the, you know, you're like Brett Bittner and you're on the LNC, good. If you're Creighton and you're working and you want to vote Republican, good. Like, any, the more fronts we can advance liberty, the better.
Yep.
You know, and so I am not the type of person who says Rand Paul is impure, so therefore he does not deserve my support. If it came down to, I will probably vote in the primary for Rand Paul. I will probably break my pledge to myself to never vote in a Republican primary ever again to vote for Rand Paul, because I'd like to give him the chance to see what he can do. I'd like to see if he, where he can take it. But do I fault Rand Paul for making different choices than I would make to get to that point? Not really, because it makes no sense to me to demand philosophical purity from a political figure. Because the very purpose of politics is to be pragmatic. Totally pragmatic. What is the decision that I can make in this moment that will
allow me to win?
What is the outcome? How can I win? It is about winning. If you are involved in the Libertarian Party, if you are involved in the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the Green Party, the point is to win. And there are benefits, and you move the ball forward in multiple ways. If you're in the Libertarian Party, maybe you won't win your election, but you won over your opponent with your arguments when you met before the debate. And that is a win. So Rand is a political figure. You cannot expect purity from that guy. Period.
You can't expect purity from Ron.
No. How much pork did that guy bring back to his district? He was beloved in his district because of two reasons. He birthed like half the babies in his district because he was an OBGYN. And second, he built bridges and monuments and all the other bullcrap that comes with pork. You know? And so he had to do certain political things to maintain his position. So Rand is not like his dad. You're just not paying attention. You're denying the fact that Ron Paul did things that were anti-libertarian. In the purest libertarian world, being in Congress is anti-libertarian.
Absolutely. That's, you know, anyone, you know, if you take it all the way to the voting is an act of aggression, then running for political office would be...
You're a tyrant.
Yes, you're a tyrant. You're a statist, you know, an aggressor. But the thing is, Ron, I think what really kills people is Ron would stand in a debate and say, the war in Iraq was a terrible decision. Or,
right.
You know, what do we care about drug use? You know, he would not be afraid to thumb the establishment belief because he knew he probably wasn't going to win.
Right.
But he was... It was his platform. That was his moment. That was spreading the message. He did the work that made... Without Ron Paul, Rand isn't possible. Mike Lee isn't possible. Ted Cruz isn't possible. The Tea Party isn't possible. None of those guys that are quasi-pro-liberty, you know, Amash, those guys all have to morph to be more like Senator Tom Cotton.
Right.
That's exactly who they would have to be, because the Republican Party would have never gone this Liberty Caucus shift.
Right. And say what you want about guys like Ted Cruz or Mike Lee. But we found an interesting fact from
Larry Reed.
Larry Reed, excuse me, is president of FEE, Foundation for Economic Education. Fantastic libertarian organization. They do a ton of good for the liberty movement. I believe they're Koch funded.
Are they?
Probably every major libertarian organization has Koch money running through it, or was started by the Koch brothers. So get over yourselves, you
cocktopi,
you Koch hating libertarians. I mean, that kills me. They share learnliberty.org videos like crazy, and then the next post is ranting against the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
It's like, where did the video money come from for that production?
Yeah. Who paid for that professional editing?
Right. So, you know, check yourself before you wreck yourself. That's my message for the day. But, you know, what was I ranting about?
No, you're talking...
Oh, yes. Larry Reed spoke here in Indianapolis, and we went and saw him, and fantastic guy, great speaker, talked about the foundations of Austrian economics, and said that Ted Cruz is, he knows Ted Cruz very well, because when Ted was in high school and college, he attended many fee seminars.
And was a chapter president.
And is very well versed in Austrian economics. And I found that to be not necessarily surprising. I definitely disagree with Ted Cruz on foreign policy and social conservatism. But I like his swagger a little bit. I generally like a-holes.
Well, I like people that will stand up to bullies.
Right.
You know, like, people call him a bully. He's not a bully. He's a bully back to the people that have been bullies, that bully the entire political process, like Chuck Schumer.
Right.
And in comes Ted Cruz, and he's like, let me show you what a bully looks like.
Yeah. Fantastic orator. If he gets in the presidential race, he will really challenge Rand, because he's a great debater, great at public speaking. He's a lawyer.
Graduated first in his class, law and undergrad at Princeton.
Yeah.
He's sharp.
Very sharp guy. Discounted as a buffoon, but he's definitely not. So he'll be interested to watch. But yeah, guys like that are largely around because guys like Ron Paul started the Tea Party. I mean, libertarians are largely responsible, thank us or not, for the Tea Party. The first Tea Party that I had ever heard about was July 4th, 2007, here in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Over property taxes. It was started by Andy Horning on the governor's mansion, on the governor mansion lawn. We had an issue where property taxes like tripled here in Indiana because Mitch Daniels got rid of the inventory tax. And so what happened, they got rid of the inventory tax on businesses, where if you're a business and you have any type of inventory, down to pens, they were charging you money for having inventory. And so we rightly got rid of it because we were losing businesses' investment here in Indiana because of it. And to make up that income, they shifted it to property taxes on businesses, farmers, and homeowners. And so people opened up their property tax bill expecting it to be $300-$400, and it was $5,000. And it was
devastating.
People lost their homes. I have many friends from that time period who got involved in the Tea Party locally because of the property taxes. It was July or August, there was a Tea Party where Melissa Donaghy, a local dominatrix, we'll get into that sometime. We should have Melissa on. She's a trip, man. We're having Melissa on the show. She's a character. She's written a book called Spanking City Hall.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I think
yes.
It's on Amazon, Spanking City
Hall. I know exactly who you're talking about, blonde lady.
Yeah, and yep. So she had an artist create a big tea bag, and they dunked it in the Indianapolis Canal, and that was like August of 2007.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, libertarians are largely responsible for the Tea Party, and then it was this great libertarian moment for about 3 or 4 months, and then Dick Armey got involved.
Oh.
But...
No, so. I know. That is the sad part because about the Tea Party. But, you know, it goes back to Rand. Like, right now, what we were going to talk about tonight was, you know, Rand signing that letter, being one of the 47 senators.
Explain this. I know nothing of any of this.
Oh.
I don't know who Tom Cotton is. I don't know about this Iranian letter. I know there's a letter that there's basically saying, Dear Iran, if you sign this, it will be gutted when the Republicans are in power. And Rand Paul said that he signed it because he wanted to remind Iran that Obama has a strong opposition party too, which didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. The other thing that I heard that I agreed with was a Democratic senator saying, could you imagine how many people would lose their effing mind if in the middle of the Iraq war debate of 2002 had a group of Democratic senators signed a letter to Saddam Hussein?
Well, funny enough,
yeah.
That's what's really funny is Hillary Clinton went to Iraq.
Really?
Right before, Hillary Clinton went over there Nancy Pelosi went to Syria while we were getting ready to declare them a terrorist state because of their ties to Iran and Hezbollah.
John McCain met with ISIS.
Yeah, John McCain created ISIS, basically. He was like, oh, I looked in their, you know, he pulled a Bush. I looked in their soul. I saw these were good guys. We funded them, built ISIS in Syria and Libya. But this is not, I'm getting so sick of the left saying, the left media saying this is unprecedented. This is constitutional, you know, constitutional crisis point. It outside of constitutional norms. No, it isn't. This isn't even close.
What happened?
This has been going on forever. Let me read to you the exact words of Newt Gingrich when a Democratic Congress.
Oh, boy.
No, you're going to laugh because these are the exact words that have been said during this.
Say what you want about Newt. He is a smart guy.
He's extremely smart. PhD. Yeah.
Total nerd.
Yeah, total nerd, but a good thinker.
Have you ever seen the, definitely somebody that I would listen to and kind of like say, all right, I want to hear this guy's thoughts. I don't agree with him. But
he won a state with one staff member in the Republican primary because he had the best ideas and was the best debater.
And the picture of the side-by-side between him and Dwight Schrute is
spectacular. Oh my God, that was outstanding.
I'm trying to fill as much time as possible while you scroll on your BlackBerry.
No, I'm ready.
BlackBerry.
Well, so just to give you an idea, this isn't unprecedented at all. So House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visits Syria in 2007 after are in the process of declaring it a terrorist state and not to visit with Assad. And she says we need to be more open. So she actually goes over there and visits. Hillary Clinton does it right before the surge in Iraq. Goes over to Baghdad to talk to build her foreign policy chops.
Right.
Then you go to Joe Biden, who condemned Rand and the 47 senators more harshly than anyone else. That's who was trotted out because that's his experience, the foreign policy. And Joe Biden was a member of, or was on the Senate Foreign Relations Council in 1987 or 88 when Jesse Helms wrote a letter to Daniel Ortega saying, we will not abide by this because it will not be the same president that's negotiating this on foreign policy. This is a public letter. It's in there. Then they do it to Clinton. A Republican Congress does it to Clinton when he's going over to get an arms treaty signed with Putin. Think about that. Wow. He's going over to get ballistic missiles or the ballistic missile defense system to stop. Neither one of us will pursue it. And the Republican Congress stops it. And Joe Biden sitting on the Senate Foreign Relations Council, and then Newt Gingrich has the gall to say this.
As he usually does.
This letter clearly violates the constitutional separation of powers. It's at best unwise and at worst illegal. This clearly violates the executive branch's exclusive prerogative of negotiating with a foreign government. That is almost word for word what Joe Biden said.
Sure.
That is almost word for word what every person on the left has said and has blown this way out of proportion.
Right.
Did you read the letter at all?
I didn't, no.
It's an explanation of our system of governance and the Senate's role in advising and consenting on binding treaties.
Okay.
There's three different kinds of agreements. There's an executive agreement where basically the executive can use essentially an executive order on sanctions with Iran.
Right.
There's a treaty, a binding treaty, which has to go through, you know, House and Senate and be signed off, ratified. And then there's one more, and it's right in between the two, but it still has to go through the Senate for advice and consent, and it's not a long-term binding, or it's like a non-binding resolution, essentially, with sanctions.
Right.
And so what was done was an explanation of our constitutional form of government to the Iranian leaders and clerics, and then it basically said that this won't be binding when the new president comes in, because we're not going to hamstring the incoming guy with this agreement that he may or may not agree with.
Right.
Which there's nothing wrong with doing that. Should they have addressed it? Maybe, but
it's sort of one of those where it's kind of like, it's better left unsaid to a foreign power. I mean, it does totally undermine the negotiating position of the president. And
But the president's negotiations are going terribly.
Yeah, no. If we're talking about pure, if we're talking about it in the theoretical sense, and we're not talking about the specific situation, Newt is totally right. So is Biden.
Biden.
It totally undermines. You know, it's just, it's like the Iranian hostage negotiation of 1980. you know, certain things were done with Carter where it wasn't effective, and then Reagan comes in and says, "Eh, I may have Alzheimer's. I'm crazy. I might pull the trigger. Send her people back."
And they did.
And they did.
That's why you always play the crazy angry card. You never extend your hand with a rogue agent.
Right.
It just it makes no sense, and it drives me crazy with the president, because this is such a passion thing for him.
Right.
You know, it's, you mentioned, you were the first person that actually told me about it. I wasn't aware this was going to be his cause after post-presidency.
Yeah.
And he's blowing it. And he's blowing it in a huge way.
Remind me what I said. What is the nuclear proliferation?
Disarmament.
Yeah. I really feel like that is the thing that Obama is going to work on more than anything else. It's the thing that he has been most proud of, working with Dick Lugar as a senator to decrease nuclear arms. And I have, that is the thing that it is like a passion point for him. Very few things seem to get Barack Obama passionate. Everything else is duty. This is passion, where it's nuclear disarmament. And yeah, you're right. The Iranian government doesn't want these negotiations. They're just going through it so they don't get bombed. They're not necessarily committed to it. I mean, so when you say, you know, that's going terribly, explain that.
So right now what's going on is they're operating off a thing called a joint action plan from 2013. What this does is it allows them to pursue, with limited oversight, the ability to develop nuclear power. There's almost no restriction on their ability to create an entirely nuclear Iran for energy purposes.
Right.
What this all misses is that the president has not been able to get ballistic missiles as part of the negotiations. Iran already has ballistic missiles. You don't develop these if you don't have an intention of putting a nuclear warhead on it. They have no other purpose than that.
Right.
So all of this is kind of irrelevant to me when they are pursuing it and they flagrantly flaunt that they have them and are developing them. And the reason they have it is entirely because they saw what happened in Iraq.
Right.
You have nukes, you don't get invaded. Iran is an extremely proud country. They are beholden to their history. They are a country that's surrounded by mountains on three sides and a Persian Gulf on the other. The Persian Gulf is their biggest strategic point of emphasis because that allows them to sell oil, control the shipping lanes, which allows them to keep civil unrest at a minimum and keep the clerical leaders in power. After the revolution in 79, Iran's not been a historically... They're not Al-Qaeda, you know, they're Shia. And they're not revolutionary until Ayatollah Khomeini, and when we in Britain and the United States CIAs went in and had a coup and installed the Shah. So this is a very proud people. They believe that they should be the main power in that area.
Right.
Hands down, that is their almost divine right because of their influence on culture. They're,
would you say they almost have a Zionist feel towards it?
They do. Yeah. They absolutely do. It is without a doubt. They don't have necessarily a problem with the United States of America prior to us, you know, being involved in the coup. But that was mainly Britain,
right?
You know, we were a minor player in that at the time. But their big issue is Israel. They're not going to blow Israel off the planet. They're not going to nuke Israel. Those are holy Muslim lands. Israel will never get struck by a nuclear bomb ever.
Right.
And so, but they see it as a proxy for the United States. They see the United States on their west in Iraq. They see United States influence prior to the coup in Yemen. We were how we were able to do all of our drone strikes. They see our influence in Pakistan. They see our influence in Afghanistan. They see our influence all around the world.
Somebody will have this meme somewhere if we can't find it in the meantime. There's a meme of all the bases surrounding Iran and talking about what a threat Iran is to the United States. Yeah,
it's hilarious.
It literally is just all these red dots, you know, three in Saudi Arabia, Yemen, all these spots in the Persian Gulf, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan.
Jordan.
I mean,
Egypt.
Yeah, all surrounding Iran. I mean, Iran is the only country we don't have military bases in. You know, I almost hear Greg Lenz arguing a non-interventionist position.
I do because I think Iran without question should be our ally and not Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Without question. Yeah. Saudi Arabia is no different than ISIS.
Totally agree.
They are, other than the fact that they don't have the crazy part about worshiping Mecca and Medina, you know, they worship Mecca and Medina and ISIS wants to tear them down. There's no difference on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Except, you know, we can't control ISIS right now by being able to buy them off. But Iran is, they should be the global, they're the Middle East leader. They are the most moderate. They're the most like us. They're the smartest culture. They're an ancient culture.
When we weren't effing with them, they had a very modernized society,
women went to school, they didn't wear headdress, you know.
The 60s, it was a very progressive culture in the Middle East, and it has regressed. It still is progressive, and there's still, you know, women don't have to wear headdresses, women don't have hijabs, women don't have to wear hijabs, they can go to school there. It is the most Western of all of the Middle Eastern countries.
Because, yeah, people forget they're Persian and not Arabic.
Right.
You know, and it's just astounding to me. I mean, we get blamed a lot for the coup. But we should have relations with them, and they should definitely be our ally in the Middle East. They should be the most stable, the most predictable. They're they're the most ancient culture. Them in Iraq, the Shia cultures.
They're the front line against ISIS.
They are, and
they see ISIS as much of a threat as ISIS is more of a threat to them than we are.
ISIS is more of a threat to Iran than Israel.
Right.
You know, it's incredible. And yet you look at like this treaty, it really doesn't. It's the Ayatollah is brilliant, quite frankly. Mm. He's been able to get. There's no restrictions on ballistic missile development. They will be able. There's a sunset clause for the first time in negotiation history. So basically, they'll have the ballistic missiles, and in 10 years, when it sunsets, or 15 years, however long they decide upon, there'll be no restrictions at all or oversight, and they can develop whatever they want. Will they use a nuke? No, but it will allow them to rise to power. So is the president doing a smart thing by engaging him now? Yes, he is, because if we can do something where Netanyahu and Israel don't go crazy and lose their minds and feel threatened and drag us into a holy war, then we can establish a working relationship with a ever moderating Iranian country where the middle class they're young, they don't hate America.
It's long been a criticism of the Obama administration by people like Bill Kristol, saying not supporting the Green Revolution in Iran while we support revolutions in countries like Libya was Egypt was a huge mistake.
Enormous.
Because we would have it potentially, according to Bill Kristol, intervening in that country with the Green Revolution would have led to a stable, progressive Iran that would have been friendly to the United States and would have wanted to participate in the tech culture, for instance, and you could deal with them economically. Which, frankly, this is my whole argument. Like, now, granted, this leads to flattening income here in the United States, but that's coming anyways.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people, there are very smart people in at the Aspen Idea Festival in South by Southwest and in Silicon Valley saying, what are we going to do with flat incomes and 50% unemployment in 20 years when the tech revolution goes global and instead of fighting with bombs in the Middle East, we start giving them jobs to work as tech advisors? Because the Iranians especially are technically gifted. I mean, they're
like
society of engineers. I mean, yeah. They're brilliant at it. And you'd be far better off by sending in Microsoft and Apple to develop that culture than the United States military.
Rather than letting the Russian firms go in there.
Right.
Which is another, like, that's why this is all connected, is what's actually happening is Iran is always vilified, and they have the ties to Lebanon, and they have the ties to Hezbollah, and they have the ties to Syria and Assad, all because of Russia.
Right.
So it's all tied together. Iran only is open to Russia because we intervened with the Shah.
Right.
Iranians don't like Russians. They had to give up the Caucasus Mountains,
Caucasus.
Caucasus Mountains. Yeah, Caucasus Mountains after the 1820 war between Russia and Iran. Mm-hmm. They had to cede over a part of their country to the Russians. So it's not like they are all, you know, Putin and the Ayatollah are best friends. They just see it as a chance to ally themselves with someone that drives the United States crazy and is a thumb in the eye, and then allows them to maintain support in Syria with Assad. That's why Assad getting overthrown is never even a consideration.
It's self-protection.
Yep.
I mean, the Iranians are out to protect themselves just as much as Americans are out to protect our interests.
And it's all economic. It's the oil. They're the third largest oil reserves in the world are in Iran.
Yeah.
That's how they fund everything. Because we have there's such restrictions on their economy that they can't keep their citizens employed, fed, housed, clothed without the oil revenues, which is why you're seeing the lower oil prices, Saudi Arabia dropping them down, because Saudi Arabia is scared to death.
Well, it's sort of like Netanyahu has painted himself into a corner and has even gone out on a limb, going past what his own intelligence agencies have even believe, and making the case that Iran is the greatest evil in the world. And maybe we all would have bought that pre-ISIS, and I think many people did. But now when you look at it, like, Iran is my kind of crazy compared to compared to ISIS destroying, ancient
artifacts
and decreed. I mean, it's, so Netanyahu is in the middle of an election, and so he has to ring the bell that he's been ringing because he needs to look like a strong leader, but hopefully he will back off after the elections.
He might lose. He's down.
Really?
He's down in the polls as of today.
Wow, okay.
He's having to do a ton, and his party's going to lose 20 to 30 seats.
Ooh. So, and the United States never shifts course. I mean, look at Cuba. Who gives a crap about Cuba? I mean, for God's sake, it is the Cuban Missile Crisis is what, 50 years old now?
Yeah.
60? I don't know.
And economically, like, their new cars are DeLoreans.
Yeah.
Like, they're not even like.
They literally drive around in the 1950s cars because Havana at one point was the second most movie theaters in the world. It was the playground of people like Frank Sinatra in the 50s. I mean, it was this very highly, it was this wealthy culture. It was the Bahamas for rich people in the 40s and 50s, 30s, 40s, 50s. And then in the late 50s, early 60s, you have the revolution, and they become a satellite of the USSR. And then we put these crippling sanctions and embargoes, and we can't travel there. And it, you know, so the economy stands still from the point that it was a wealthy capitalist society. And so they drive around in cars from the 1950s. And these are some of the most well-preserved cars on the planet because it's all they have. Because they don't get
there's no dealership.
There's no 2010 Chevy Malibus rolling up in Cuba.
No.
So there's no USSR to feed them cars. So the Yugos didn't really seem to last more than 5 or 6
no.
years. So, I just look at that, and that is just a case of absolute insanity. I've thought that for 20 years. I'm 31 years old, and I have since 10 years old thought, this is crazy what we're doing to the Cubans. That's a very nerdy 10-year-old. I remember
did you read a lot of Che when you were
No, I remember sitting in the car during the impeachment hearing. It was when it was in the Senate. It was before the Senate, and we drove to the Greenwood Park Mall, and my mom, brother, and sister went in shopping, and I think they might have even gone to a movie. And I sat in the car, in the back seat, listening to the Senate proceedings on the local NPR station because I wanted to hear what happened to Clinton. Like, that's how nerdy of a kid
I was.
Oh,
man.
Like, that was 98, 99.
Yeah, 98,
so I was
99.
I was in, like, high school at that point.
You're a freshman or?
Freshman-ish. Yeah. But, yeah, I was way into all that. But I wasn't into the sex stuff. I was not a very good eighth grader. I was not, like, I was more like, what's a blowjob, guys? How does that work? It's more like, I don't understand. Let me see. What is the procedure here amongst the House and the Senate?
They're not following parliamentary order.
This Jesse Helms.
Oh, God.
That Dan Burton. What a mensch. He is. He's a scumbag. God, that was so controversial when Dan Burton, a local rep here forever, a long, long anti-vaxxer. People don't realize this, but the member of Congress, Dan Burton, from Indiana's 5th District forever, was an anti-vaccine guy. And he famously called Bill Clinton in 1998 a scumbag. And man, that was like the most controversial thing in the news. I mean, the people were calling for him to step down, resign because it was so disgraceful. And you just think how far politics has come from 1998 when you called him a scumbag. And yeah, trivia for you. Greg had to go to the bathroom again, so I'm trying to fill time instead of taking a break because, let's be honest, I don't want to edit. Did you know that the term scumbag is actually slang for a condom? There you go. Impress your friends at work with that one. Go up to your boss and share that with them, and I'm sure they'll be very impressed with all of your knowledge. So, well, this has been... What are we at? An hour and 34 minutes. We probably should wrap up. I think we should wrap up. What do you think? Do you have any... You don't want to liberate any more countries with bombs, or what, are you good?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You're going to see... we didn't even really talk about... One, the best response to the letter, and I know it's John McCain, so I'm hesitant to ever give him props.
Stop.
His response was beautiful trolling.
Okay.
I sign a lot of letters. I died when I read that. He blew it off, wouldn't give him the time of day. I sign a lot of letters each day. I thought, that is wonderful.
Can we touch on Lindsey Graham before we go?
Yes, let's talk about it.
So I posted on my Facebook page, I think we posted it on Wall, but Ben Swan had an unbelievable piece of audio from Lindsey Graham where he basically said, you know, if he were president, he would restore military funding and
stop the cuts
in the military and surveillance state. And to make sure that it happened, he would keep the military. He would keep Congress in session with the military if he had to.
Yeah.
And I posted on my Facebook page, and some nerd, some real jerk, was like, some kid that I don't like. Mm. Anyways, but he was like, he's clearly joking. And I finally heard on another podcast. Let me give a shout out to the podcast. I don't want to get his name wrong. The Jason Stapleton podcast. I heard the audio today. Which Jason Stapleton, by the way, most beautiful setup of a studio I've ever seen in my life. Go check out his YouTube channel. Unbelievable. But I heard the audio of Lindsey Graham saying this very clearly. Not a joke.
Not a joke.
One of my long-term principles for judging a politician is, if that person had absolute power, would I be alive or not as a libertarian? Lindsey Graham would have me killed. Hillary Clinton would have me killed. Bill Clinton, probably not.
Unless you had dirt on him.
Barack Obama, definitely. Rand Paul, no. I'd be alive, definitely. And Democrats would be alive, too. So he clearly was not joking.
No, he wasn't joking. It's Lindsey Graham. He and McCain are the two, and they're the oldest hawks in the Senate.
They're not even. I mean, Peter King has lost the most authoritarian member of Congress title to Lindsey Graham.
And now we have a new one, the author of the letter, Tom Cotton.
Tell me about this guy.
He's a Harvard undergrad at the Kennedy School of Government graduate, and then he graduated from Harvard Law, where Elizabeth Warren was his law school professor.
Okay. What state is he from?
Arkansas.
All right.
Arkansas.
Arkansian.
Arkansian.
Gosh. That Arkansas. A lot of problems come out of Arkansas.
A little town called Hope. Mike Huckabee.
Roger Paxton. Whitney Davis,
Mike
Lots
Huckabee.
Of problems come out of Arkansas.
I'll tell you, man, it's a mess. but no, he's a young... If the Liberty Caucus hadn't shifted the narrative within the Republican Senate, then he would be the next shining superstar. They've already got a state legislator that has authored legislation that will allow him to run for president in 2020 and still run for Senate again, re-election, like they're doing with Rand in Kentucky.
Tom Cotton? They've also done that in Indiana for Mike Pence.
Yeah, for Mike Pence. But that's how much of a rock... I mean, if things had worked out differently, like, this guy was going to be the young, smart Dick Cheney. And apparently people fear him because he's obviously a smart guy. But he went to Harvard Law, went to Harvard undergrad, joins the military. While in the military, he is part of Operation Iraqi Freedom, leads 101st Airborne Division, then is in Afghanistan, serves there, is part of the story. I mean, he's got chops militarily, but then he authored a letter that was very controversial, claiming that anyone that wanted to, or the three, who was it, someone from the New York Times or a senator that released the names of the spy programs that they were using, had committed treason, and it blew up in the New York Times, and that kind of started his political career. But so then he comes back, he's honorably discharged from the military in I think 2008 or 9, then gets on as a clerk with the federal court judge, clerks for them, then starts working for a big firm doing labor, constitutional, and employment law, and then all levels of national, federal, and local law. And then he goes on to join McKinsey Consulting Group, then runs his family farm and runs for House in 2012, wins, then runs for Senate after only one term in the House.
Wow.
And he's young, sharp, hawk, the hawk of all hawks.
See, I totally thought of, anytime I hear of a new senator, I always think there's some sort of Tea Party wacko.
Oh, no.
You know? So it sounds like he's a statist to the core.
The district he won in, it was the first time or second time it had gone Republican since Reconstruction.
Oh, wow.
I mean, this guy, and he's smart. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And he scares people. John Cornyn was asked about his letter. John Cornyn said, let me get this right, Tom Cotton is a nice man and an interesting man, and that's all I'll say.
What?
For a freshman senator from Arkansas?
Why are people afraid of this guy?
He's got the defense contractors in his back pocket. So the day after he sent the letter, he went to a meeting of Boeing, all the major defense contractors, where he was raising money for his PAC, which he'll inevitably try to start a counterinsurgency against the Liberty Caucus.
Right.
But his big thing is he wants to sell Israel B-52 bombers with the bunker-busting bombs, and his biggest political campaigns donations to his PACs come from Boeing, who makes those.
Gotcha.
Manufacturers, though. Like, he is a young brunette Dick Cheney.
Sounds like a really awful human being.
Horrendous. He is a statist to the core, a hawk to the core, imperialist. I mean, he was there. He was, in the midst of it all and everything, but he's got a perverse view of the world.
Oh, great. I have a newfound enemy. I swear to all wall listeners, dear leader has made a new enemy, and his name is Tom Cotton.
Tom Cotton.
Sounds racist.
I can neither confirm or deny that he might be racist.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I'm not going to say that Tom Cotton is racist, because we can't verify that that's not true.
Roger Paxton, I want you to primary him. I'll run your campaign. We'll get this thing working
out.
I'll get you to talk Republican. We'll get you winning.
Oh, my.
What?
Snapchat.
Oh.
Nothing. Don't worry about it. Tell you later. Nothing.
But no, so
that's not really a Snapchat.
That's who authored the letter, and he is the next Dick Cheney, so watch out for him.
Great.
I mean, he's going to fill in for McCain and Graham, but he's actually intelligent, so that's even more dangerous.
Do you think John McCain's... I mean, Lindsey Graham's a buffoon. Can't stand the man. Total idiot. Like, just be who you are. We all know who you are. Oh, wow. This guy looks like a total douchebag.
Yep. Captain.
Captain douchebag. His wife's pretty. Yeah, he's got big ears.
He's a checklist guy if there ever was one.
Yeah. I mean, I bet the Arkansas GOP was just drooling.
Oh.
When this guy said that
prodigal son.
Yeah.
When he came back for a year to run the family farm.
Oh, forget it, yeah.
After leaving McKinsey Consulting Group.
And he looks young, too.
He's very young. I don't even know if he's 40 yet, is he?
He's going to be such a problem for generations.
Yep.
This guy is all Arkansas. Tom Cotton is fighting for you. Oh, I hate politics. Mark Pryor cast the deciding vote that started the Civil War, paid for by Tom Cotton. What does that even mean? Yeah, this guy's a bad dude.
He campaigned in camouflage in a UTV. That was his campaign commercials against the Democrat. I mean, this guy is a shooting star.
I see it.
Do you see it? Yeah.
And he's got the That's not even really legal.
Nope.
Oh, there's him in his dress uniform at Arlington Cemetery.
Yeah, oh, that's what he did for a while. Between Afghanistan and Iraq, he was in charge of the changing of the guard.
Oh, shut up.
Swear to God, he's Captain America.
Oh, this guy is... Yeah, I already don't like him. And he's got a video podcast called Lunch with Tom. Uh-huh. Ugh, I want to throw up. He's everything about politics I can't stand in one man.
And he's... I mean, if there's a chosen one... Granted, Southern Republicans don't tend to do well.
Right.
For whatever reason.
Does he have the accent?
He can fake it.
Oh, okay.
But he went to Harvard.
Yeah, he's got like when Obama goes and speaks to the Black Liberty Caucus.
Exactly.
Like, my brothers.
Yep.
And that sort of thing.
The whole reason I was conceived was Selma. Like, what are you talking about? That was 4-5 years after, you know?
Yeah. And Tom. Nah, I can't even do a Southern accent. I could do a Barack Obama in front of the Black Liberty Caucus better than I can do a Southern accent. Y'all!
Y'all.
All right, we need to wrap up.
Oh, sorry. And this will be my last thing then. This letter was a favor to the president in these negotiations, FYI.
Okay.
Because if it is someone that's more hardline and someone that is... Because Netanyahu and the president have no relationship and can't stand each other. That's
right.
You know, no doubt. But this was clearly a... It may end up being very strategic because it may force them into an agreement now where since the momentum seems to be on their side, that they're getting concessions and maybe they can get more and they'll hold out for more.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans threatening it like that and coming down hard that there's a animosity against it, it might force them to take a deal now that may not be available or maybe even worse and make us bring Israel and Saudi Arabia, support them in an armed attack, you know, in a war against Iran. Because Saudi Arabia is going to want to wage war against them regardless. They're scared out of their mind. Yemen just fell to Shia. The Houthanis.
I can't see a scenario where Saudi Arabia goes on the attack against Iran. Because they are so besieged around themselves that they'd have to hold their resources to fight off whatever insurgencies are headed their way. So why weaken your position by fighting a well-armed opponent who has nuclear arms?
Why not do it before they get nuclear arms and before they... Basically, Iran's seizing control of Iraq right now.
Right.
They're seizing control of Iraq. They're going to take Yemen. You're looking at a scenario...
Yeah. Okay, I could see that scenario.
Lebanon...
Yeah. Yeah.
Syria.
The Jordanians probably hold.
They always hold. They're kings too. I mean, this king, he doesn't back down.
You have a, what is his, King...
Abdullah.
A King Abdullah boner.
Oh my gosh. I love the guy.
When you put on that Mission Accomplished suit, you were all in.
Not just that, when he's flying the missions to drop the bombs on ISIS, ready to paratroop out onto ISIS without arms.
You know... At the time, the Mission Accomplished thing, I didn't get why people had a problem with that. And now that I'm a little older and I'm politically different, the Abdullah thing reminded me of that. And I get that he was flying onto the aircraft carrier and like he wanted to... I get why people had a problem with Bush flying and giving the speech in the suit. And like it just looks so bad, so arrogant, like... You don't fly in and then get out in the spacesuit and have the speech about how mission accomplished. It was like, what? Whose idea was that? Like,
true.
Awful.
But like their king goes on the missions.
I know.
That's different.
I know. Yeah, that's totally different.
Yeah, but for him to do it and pretend like he's one of them.
It's like riding the two-seater at the Indy 500. It's like you're riding in the two-seater. You're not actually driving.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of... Man, what a bad choice that was.
Yeah, they had a lot of bad... whoever their... not communications director, but I guess the image consultant, or, you know, had a brand Bush was terrible.
Andy Card.
Yeah.
I blame him.
Oh, God.
It's because he's from Boston, and he sounds like he's eating chowder. All right. My last thing is that it is, you know, it has only been 50 years since Selma. And say what you want about Barack Obama, it is badass that a black president was speaking at Selma 50 years later.
With John Lewis
John Lewis who walked there, you know, the bushes were there, although the New York Times cropped them out of the photo.
Not the New York, everybody
cropped GW out of the...
They were cropping out white Democrats.
I know, yeah. Al Sharpton managed to find his Weasley way in there, but it still is pretty badass that, you know, anytime you get the opportunity and you've got a lazy afternoon or whatever, go to YouTube and just listen to Martin Luther King's speeches. I'm convinced that he's probably, I think he's the greatest orator that I've ever heard. I mean, not maybe in history because I've not read all the orators. All the classic Greek orators or whatever. But there's nobody who inspires me more, who just moves you, and who can put together words in a way that Martin, just a divinely inspired human being. I mean, unbelievable. Certainly a man with his own moral failings, but unbelievable when it came to speaking. And I've long said that for our parents' generation and our parents' generation, civil liberties and the court battles and moving the hearts and minds of their fellow citizens, for those previous generations, it was for equality. And for our generation, it will be privacy. And so in many ways, we have to follow the model. Read Taylor Branch's books about Martin Luther King and the struggle that was the civil rights movement. Because in many ways, Martin Luther King is the template. And so yeah, that is our Martin Luther King hunk for the week.
No, it's wonderful that, you know, we have, that is that's the one of the dark, or the original sin, or the nearly unforgivable
avoid
sin
dark
on the Republic.
There, Greg. Yeah, I heard you right? Switch phrases.
The dark sin. No, it's, you know, it's, that's the stain on America, slavery, and then right. You know, the civil rights being necessary will always be that unhealed wound.
Oh, totally. But, you know, whatever. I don't mean whatever to whatever, but I mean whatever, let's move on. So, because I've run out of things to say finally after 2 hours. So, this has been an hour and 50 minutes. Good
wow.
Lord, we talked a lot.
We were afraid we weren't going to make it an hour.
I know. I was like, well, it'll just be the two of us. Stop by. We'll do a podcast. If we get an hour, that'll be good because it's politics and it's not, you know.
That's what happens when you start talking about the Clintons. There's so much to talk about.
Man.
They're so interesting.
We got the Clintons. We got Rand Paul. We talked about foreign policy. This podcast had it all.
I had it all in there.
I don't know how we could do better next week.
I'm just afraid. Did we mention libertarian?
We
said Ron Paul.
Ron Paul. Yeah, we said Ron Paul.
Okay.
Yeah, we talked about liberty, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever.
If you're a libertarian, hate Tom Cotton.
Yeah, we gave him that red meat.
He's worth violating the NAP.
Yeah. What else can we say? We hated on Lindsey Graham.
Hate on Lindsey Graham.
We used the word status several times.
Hillary.
Non-interventionism.
That'll cover it. We're good.
We had Larry Reed in there. Lots of libertarian
stuff. Yeah, that's
stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
We got the Larry Reed.
Yeah,
Larry Reed's the ultimate Trump card.
Now, should we mention Gary Johnson so Roger Paxton doesn't have a shit fit?
Oh, is he a big Johnson fan?
Oh, he's a big Johnson fan, all right. No, this wasn't really a review of the 2016 candidates, but I would anticipate that Gary Johnson will seek the nomination of the Libertarian Party, so go check him out.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No, I think what's national is falling apart.
Yeah, but that last interview he just did sounded so depressed and defeated.
I definitely think that there was a vibe. Anytime you run for a Libertarian Party seat and you're used to winning as a Republican, and then you think you're going to get nationally 5% and you get 2%, I think that crushes your spirit a little bit. And so my guess is that Gary's running a little bit more of a Ron Paul 2008 campaign to inspire people and kind of get ideas out there, especially legalization of marijuana, which is a big issue for him. What?
I know.
Trust me, it's time, man.
Oh, no, no doubt. Rand Paul and Cory Booker and Kirsten Gillibrand.
Yeah, the huge, huge
bill.
Piece of legislation being introduced there. And so he will be the Libertarian nominee if he decides to run. Although Jesse Ventura said that he would be mm-hmm. seeking the nomination. And let me tell you, that guy can go fuck himself.
Whoa.
Yeah. No. Jesse Ventura... in 1998 was a hero of mine. He's just become crazy. He's become a crazy old man. And I'm sure that there are many people listening right now who love Jesse Ventura. I hate Alex Jones, too.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't like that, suck it. All right, that was a little harsh, okay? I still want you to listen to Weird Libertarians. You can listen to Alex Jones and Jesse Ventura. Just know that they're out of their mind crazy. And they're. I think Jesse's legitimately probably crazy. Although he does bring up some stuff that other people don't, and the conspiracy stuff is interesting. Alex Jones is just full of crap. There's no way this guy believes everything he tells you on a daily basis.
No.
But, masterful entertainer. That Piers Morgan segment where he's 1776! 1776! Unbelievable entertainment.
It was.
Total full of crap, though. Totally full of crap.
We gotta stand up. I mean, Piers Morgan hasn't been back in the state since. Scared him so bad.
Scared him so bad. Texas will rise again.
Yeah, he went right back into the arms of that non-constitutional republic.
Man, this really was, like, I'm making fun of Alex Jones and Jesse Ventura and telling people to vote for Gary Johnson.
You're going
to
vote for Rand Paul in the Republican primary?
I'm not making any friends this episode.
You're going to get some hate mail.
I don't care. I'm 31 years old. I'm past the point of giving a crap. Like, I have reached the age where, like, we talked about this earlier, where it's like, you know, I need the money to do that, but I don't want to do that. I want to sit on my couch.
I'd literally rather do anything else other than that.
Like, there are things that when you're in your 20s, you do it because you, like, I need to do this for the experience. Now I'm at the age where I don't need any more experience. I need to be left alone. And a girlfriend. And some pizza. So those are the things I need. Pizza, a girlfriend, and to be left alone. And
if your voice would stop cracking, that might all be possible.
And more Mac products. That new MacBook. Oh, Mac, I love you. So, yeah, I just... If people don't, like, that's the thing about divorce. Like, I used to care so much about everybody liking me. Like, it was really important that I never said no to anything. I overcommitted myself to the point of making myself crazy. I wanted everybody to like me all the time. Knowing that there is one person on this planet that hates my guts, and there is nothing I can do to change that is so freeing.
Oh, absolutely.
Because there's nothing I can do to change their mind. I will always be an asshole to that poor young lady.
And it frees you to troll as much as you want.
Right. I just...
Process of elimination. Yeah. Down, down, down.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, everything was, you know, I didn't do anything wrong. It was, she didn't either. It was just mutual, whatever. But... Don't give me that look. I didn't. She didn't.
Oh, no, no,
we
no.
don't talk.
No, yeah.
We're not pals.
No, I don't mean it like that.
But,
you know.
But.
I just mean that you're dear leader. How could you be wrong?
That's a good point.
You know what I mean?
That's a good point. Well, not even my cat agrees with me most of the time, do you, Mittens? Honey. Talking about a producer. We need to replace Mittens. She's not doing crap around here. We need to get Aaron Ewart in here to produce the show.
Yes, Aaron Ewart, you're in the draft. We're drafting you into service.
Because he needs another thing to distract him. So, all right, kids. Thank you for joining us and indulging us in this episode. Can't believe that we got 2 hours in. This was a good one. This felt good. It felt right. It felt fun. But there's always room for improvement. So, as always, we promise
to do better next time.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.